F1, number 30B.
Now, we always have to see what is at the beginning and what is at the end. If we don't know the ideas of mind or of spirit, and just say, well, there is just mind and the one mind, it doesn't mean anything definite, and therefore it can never really hit the nail on its head. But when we culture it through first its analysis, and then exercise it and bring these ideas near to consciousness, then little by little these ideas begin to melt into each other and melt into each other and blend with each other and blend with each other until it's just again one mind. But then I know what it is. And I know what mind is. And then it is that point that when I read something in the Bible or in anywhere where these ideas which I have on my list don't occur, I still can detect where mind is. Because mind then is something much bigger, much wider, much deeper, much broader. Now, that is a parallel symbol to what these prophets may teach us. You see? That these prophets, that we can ask ourselves, why should I see these laws, these specific laws? Why should I see the difference between the law, say, of Hosea and the law of Joel and the law of Amos? Why should I see the difference between the law of Amos and that of Obadiah? Why should I see the difference? Well, it is just because of that. Just as we analyze mind to the ideas of mind, today we analyze the Christ in the various ideas of the Christ, so to say, in the various offices of the Christ. Culture that, but only for the one and only purpose that finally, as we have drilled that in consciousness, something just within us becomes Christ-like. And it just goes back, just as John then would have said, now today I just think about mind. So the end of the story will be that we just see that through this drilling, something in us has become so cultured and so refined and so clear that I just think, oh, that's the Christ. And when I say the Christ, I just mean Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah. I just mean all those prophets. I just know that they operate just only as Haggai and as Zechariah and Malachi. I just see, then they are one again. So it isn't what it looks like always at the beginning. At the beginning, every new step looks, so to say, academic. It looks as if it would be intellectual. It looks as if it would be stereotyped. It looks as if it would be narrow, limited. When I say, now you see, Hosea's law is different than Amos' law. It doesn't go as far as Amos' law. Well, the human mind says, well, what's the use of it? Well, it is the use of it because it brings consciousness into the schooling of the Christ principle, into the science of the Christ principle. Only for one purpose, that afterwards a term like Christ means something definite. Very definite. And no more something indefinite. Or that the Christ then means more than just one definition of the Christ. In earlier times we felt, well, what is the Christ? We would have said, well, Mrs. Eddy defines the Christ as the divine manifestation of God which comes to the flesh to destroy incarnate error. That's the Christ. Well, that's the Christ. That's the Christ, how she defines it in the glossary. But she defines it very differently, say, in the platform. In the glossary, she defines it as the Christ, as it is shown mostly in the Bible, and as the roof category of the whole prophets. That's the roof category. Yes, the Christ is always that which comes to the flesh to destroy incarnate error. But the Christ does many, many more things. And there's many, many more aspects. So it helps these to see these various standpoints, helps us to get away from a stereotyped and limited sense of any definition of the Christ, and broadens out and widens out our sense what the Christ is. Is that clear too? See, I speak now all this morning, so to say, about the technique of it, the meaning of it. You see, it isn't perhaps so inspiring as if I just would just talk about these prophets as they speak, but I think in this way I help you more, because it clarifies various questions which may raise up afterwards. And so if I can clarify them, you may go home much more in the sense of peace and of knowing where to go and what for and where it leads us. So, well, we have another quarter of an hour over. Perhaps what we can do now is to see now in the chart which we have what these prophets try to show fundamentally. I want to go now again through all the 16 prophets, just pinpointing, so to say, its main message. The title of that chart is The Christ. It's the Christ matrix. The Christ here, see, the Christ here is defined and has a purpose which is specific to the prophetic age, and when we do the Christianity matrix, the Christ will have another purpose. Here it is that we always, through all the 16, we have that top category, Christ, which says, principle God has one big aim, and that is to translate principle to the point of man as idea, and to bring out in its own idea all that is God-like, to establish, so to say, the God-likeness of principle, so that there is spiritual agreement between God and man in his image and likeness. That's how one definition in the platform runs of the Christ. That's the aim of it, not the modus operandi of it. See, it is, though we always will feel that God is constantly working and working and working to bring out its idea. That's the first translation. And at the same time, see, it breaks down everything which is not of that nature of idea. At the same time, it works and works on every situation as that which breaks down the first degree, then improves the situation, so to say, as the second degree, so as finally everything will be translated back into the nature of idea in the third degree. That, so that finally in the third degree, mortal mind disappears, as she says, and man in the image and likeness appears. And Daniel appears in that way. That's the end of it. So, then, I like to make side remarks, just always to bridge it over to the Christianity matrix, you see. Then, Paul starts with Romans, and always goes out now from that Christ sense which has established the spiritual agreement between God and man. So his main definition of the Christ he has is not that of the prophet, that God comes to men and reverses and reverses and reverses and reverses, but he goes out from that which Daniel has achieved, from the, he always goes out from the spiritual agreement between God and man, as the image and likeness of God. From that definition of the Christ. Can you see the categories that begin to come alive? That we just can't mix always anything. That if we speak about the Christ in the prophetic era, it's something definite. It's not just any definition we can take from the textbook and in order to verify what the Christ in the prophetic age means. Is that clear? See, the more as we see these categories, something very interesting happens in our work. And that is this. See, when we interpret the Bible in our talks or classes or writings and so on, we like to do that which John Dolley liked to do. He said, let's verify it through correlative statements from the textbook. Those statements were in Mrs. Eddy's language. Mrs. Eddy would say the same as the Bible language said it in the Bible terminology. And the more we begin to see the Bible in its message, in its categories, the more we will have difficulty in finding such correlative passages. It's quite amazing how more and more in the last 3 or 4 years, when I tried to find correlative passages in the textbook, I always had to say, I hardly can find any. I can always find dozens and dozens which are nearly the same, but not right the same. One will always find some. Because one's sense has become so cultured in categories, that one begins to feel quite tangibly that Mr. Zeddy was practically always writing under the roof category of science, of Christianity and science, and not so much under the roof category of the Word and of the Christ. And that therefore it's very difficult to find correlative statements which are exactly the same. And we will always find statements which bring out the same problem, but from the point of view of science from which he was writing. Can you see that? For instance, I have gone through all her statements which she makes about the Christ, you see, in the textbook, trying to find out, can I find a definition of the Christ which would fit, say, Hosea, and one, say, which would fit Joel, and one Amos, and so on. And I could hardly find any. Could find here and there one which I said, oh, that's practically what Hosea's attitude of the Christ is. But reading her textbook nowadays, after having got a sense of the various categories and roof categories, one begins to see Mrs. Eddy's job was to give the interpretation of the Bible and not to give another wording to the Bible. is that clear what I mean? You see, not to write the Bible again from Genesis to Revelation in modern terms. She doesn't do that. She interprets that whole thing from another standpoint. And therefore, when I make like this, I just mean the roof of it is my halo. It's the umbrella, you know, under which everything is put, you see. So I want to bring out that you see that Mrs. Eddy's writing is really finishing the Bible. One is hardly allowed to say that because it's a bit heretical. Yes. But it is so, really, you see. It is really so. It is really so that that the Bible more or less is bringing out the world roof category and the Christ roof category and the Christianity roof category, and that science and health really should be added to the Bible. At the end of the Bible, that's the new text, because it gives a very different standpoint, a standpoint of science. And so whatever she writes, therefore mostly those definitions which she has in the glossary, they are mostly adaptable to take as correlative statements for the Bible, because there she adapts them to the Bible. And the glossary is no part of the textbook, so to say. It is after the 16th chapter. It doesn't belong to the matrix of science. The matrix of science is from prayer to apocalypse. But the glossary is added, and it is a new term. Against the new language of the old story. Whereas the textbook views the old story from a very new standpoint. So that's why that definition of the Christ in the glossary, that definition we can easily take for the prophets as being right after measure, so to say, for the prophets to illustrate the Christ there. I have already again digressed from the subject, but that brings me just to our break. So let's see that also clear. You see that more and more we will begin to realize that the textbook will not relate the same story, will not teach us, so to say, the same standpoints, but that the textbook is the scientific matrix, or the matrix of science, and views for our present state of thinking and for our present era, really, that which has gone before. That's why, see, we could say, well, if the textbook would only say the same thing, what the Bible says. You see, there is always a lot of discussion going on about the position of the textbook and the Bible, and it's certainly a question which will go on and on in our mentality, and we'll find more and more clarification on it. But we can see one thing, that the textbook, though it is based on the Bible, does not give the Bible in modern language. If it would, then we could say, well, let's get rid of the Bible. We have everything now in present-day language and in understandable language in the textbook. Let's get rid of the Bible. We can't get rid of the Bible. There are these two textbooks. Why are these two textbooks? Because the Bible leads us to the standpoint of the textbook. We can read the textbook without knowing the Bible. That we can easily do. We can study the textbook without knowing the Bible. We can easily do. But we will never get the touch of that textbook without knowing the Bible. Because the Bible, through the Word, and then through the Christ matrix, and then to the Christianity matrix, just drills us and thrills us into the feel, into the scientific feeling of that which is necessary to have in order that the textbook yields its message as science. After that point, it doesn't yield its message as science. It only yields its message as a mental science, as a comfortable book, as a book which brings comfort and so on. But it never will reveal to itself the feel of science. Can you say the feel of science? See? So we can't discard the Bible. We say, well, The textbook has all the standpoints in it, because we begin to see the 16 chapters are the word chapters, four word chapters, four Christ chapters, four Christianity chapters, four science chapters, so we can say, well, they contain all. They don't. They only contain the word in its four aspects, and the Christ in its four aspects, and Christianity in its four aspects, and the science in its four aspects, under the impress of science. They don't really contain, it does really not contain the Word under the impress of the Word, the Word under the Christ under the impress of the Christ, and the Christianity under the impress of Christianity doesn't. That's why the Bible is part of our instruction. That's why Mrs. Eddy lays that stress on it, that both must be our teacher, that we can't do it just with one.